By Judicial Decree 9, Court-Martial, written by Commander James Bondage, narrated by Nigel Moore. Preface. It is only by an accident of history that we no longer observe the ancient Roman custom of judicial enslavement for debt, or as a penalty for a criminal conviction. But what if history had taken a different path? Modern physics teaches that there are an infinite number of universes, and therefore an infinite number of Earths, some so similar to our own as to be indistinguishable, others so different as to be unrecognizable. Among the infinite number of possibilities, then, there must therefore be an infinite number of Earths where history did go a different way than ours, and must exist somewhere Earths with histories in which the old Roman way is still followed, and slavery is still the law. This story is set in one of those histories. Chapter 1. Pirates of the Barbary Coast. Anyone who had more than a superficial acquaintance with Quentin Scales knew him to be a quiet, civilized sort of man, polite, correct, and soft-spoken. Among his nodding acquaintances were those who, not unnaturally, believed that this mild exterior reflected an equally mild interior, and who thought Quentin was a milquetoast, who could be easily intimidated by a strong personality. Quentin himself had no disagreement with the first part of this assessment, for he liked to think of himself as a man of reason rather than one governed by his emotions, although anyone who thought he was a weakling was mistaken. He was intimidated by no one, with the exception of his boss and mentor, Cain. And yet, there was some primitive instinct buried deep beneath his quiet, rational surface that craved excitement, adventure, and violence. Perhaps it was a stray gene inherited from some distant ancestor, a bloody-handed, broadsword-wielding Viking, a savage, skin-clad barbarian warrior from ancient Gaul, or a mountain man in a coonskin cap with a string of redskin scalps hanging from his rawhide belt. At least, he could not think of any other reason why he derived so much pleasure from impersonating a ruthless medieval count, a marauding Hun, or, as in this case, a merciless Barbary pirate, who had boarded a passing caravel, slaughtered the crew, abducted the English noble women who had been passengers on the unlucky ship, enacted by his lovely and beloved slave wives, Olivia Addison and Eleanora Riley, and now had these helpless females in his power, to be cruelly used as he wished. Just the sight of Eleonora in her antique clothing, with its complex laces and stays, disheveled and torn enough to provide tantalizing glimpses of her creamy thighs and incomparable breasts, her coppery hair in disarray, her hands bound roughly behind her back, and a huge red ball jammed in her mouth, lying at his feet on the wooden deck of the captured ship, which was in reality an ancient Calistan carpet on the floor of his bedroom, staring up at him with her green eyes wild with, well, simulated, fear, was almost enough to make Quentin bring the play to a premature conclusion, drop his trousers, and take her then and there. But Eleonora was not his only temptation to stray from the program. Lying next to her, also strictly bound and gagged, dressed in a low-cut gown which had been torn apart, during a struggle with the pirates, perhaps, was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman who was the end product of generations of aristocratic breeding. She had a face of classical beauty and a mature, sexy body with the long, beautifully turned legs of a runway model. Her name was Olivia Addison. Olivia's expression, her futile writhing and terrified, stifled cries, were more convincing than Eleonora's play-acting, but then Olivia was a professional actress, known to aficionados of the erotic cinema as the society slut, and the most popular sex star in the western provinces. Olivia and Eleonora were technically not Quentin's chattels, that is, he was not their sole owner, as they had originally been purchased for the multimillionaire Rupert Cain, by Quentin, at a slave auction several years earlier, back when he was still making a precarious living as an independent slave agent. The childless bachelor, Cain, had been so pleased with Eleonora, purchased for the record sum of 95,000 crowns, that he had made Quentin his business manager, junior partner, protege, and heir to his fortune, the seventh largest in the WP, and given him a wing of the vast mansion Briarcliff in which to live. In addition, when his interest in Olivia and Eleonora waned, as invariably happened with even his most beautiful slaves, Cain had passed them on to Quentin for his exclusive use, except for the continued employment of Olivia in the aforementioned Mastery Studios erotic films. This arrangement suited all parties involved very well, as Quentin had fallen in love with the irresistible Eleonora, who was as sweet-tempered and gentle as she was beautiful, on the day he bought her, and for reasons Quentin never quite understood, she had also fallen for him. Although Eleonora had been a virgin and a complete sexual innocent when Quentin bought her, Cain soon taught her to first enjoy, then require, sexual intercourse preceded by a healthy dose of bondage and discipline. Under Cain's inflexible training, Olivia too had been transformed. She had shed her cold, arrogant, superior attitude and become a new woman, humble, warm, loving, and as sexually submissive and responsive as Eleonora.